This is the 29th of March in the year 2001, and this is Bob Gilgore interviewing Shirley Bradshaw at the Chapel Hill Public Library. Good morning, Shirley.
Good morning, Bob.
How are you today?
Fine.
On this rainy day. I'm good, thank you. I want to thank you for coming here. I know you're with a grandchild and your life is very busy, so I appreciate your time very much. Thank you. I'm going to ask you, begin with a very broad question, and that is, what was it like growing up in Chapel Hill? And you grew up on McDade Street in Chapel Hill?
McDade, yes. My younger years were spent, we lived with my grandmother. So my younger years were spent growing up with my grandmother and my aunts there to protect while mother and daddy were working. My grandmother was a teacher, as they used to say, a school teacher. And
your mother, or
my grandmother?
Your grandmother was a school teacher.
My dad's mother. And very quiet but very strong lady. So she influenced my life a great deal. There were three of us, three children, at that time. In my family, and my aunt also lived there, and she had four children, so they lived upstairs and we lived downstairs, so sort of divided up. And it was an enjoyable life. The things I remember, my mother and dad used to go leave out for work early in the morning before we got up, and, I think 5:30, like that. And daddy would leave even earlier because he was a janitor at the Kappa Sig House that burned yesterday. And at that point, mother was cooking there. Daddy was a janitor. And so he would leave earlier to stoke the furnace, and then she would go in a little bit later. Their breakfast. So they were gone when we got up to get ready for school, but my grandmother took care of us at that point. And mother would have a break midday and come home around 1 or 2 o'clock in the day. She would have to be back at 4, but she would come home to check on us and then go back to work for the evening meal. And very often, Daddy would come home around breakfast time to be sure that we got off to school okay, or to give us a ride to school. And it was a very, I have good memories. My dad, I think through us, he loved animals. So we had, I had a pony. And he had a little buggy, all of the things that you could do with. I had saddles, buggies, and all of that. We had dogs, and he liked Cocker Spaniels, so that was what we had. And at certain points, we had ducks. It was, today you wouldn't be able to have all of these animals because of the ordinances. But we had ducks, we had turkeys, all sorts of things, and it was a good childhood. And I think often that Daddy must have, through us, he was able to enjoy things that he hadn't had a chance to enjoy during his childhood. But anyway, I have good memories. And my mother's mother lived out from Chapel Hill. So during the week we were with my dad's mother, and on weekends we would go out to visit my grandmother that we said it was out in the country. And I had cousins out there, so it was I just have good memories of growing up.
You had a lot of family around.
A lot of family.
Did your relatives who lived in the country farm?
My grandfather had farmed, but he died when I was 3. So my grandmother didn't do very much farming. I had some uncles who lived in the area, and they, for a while they did, but once Memorial Hospital opened, they came to work at Memorial. And my father, in addition to the job at the fraternity house, he also worked at Memorial. He started to work at Memorial when it first opened. He worked on the psych ward.
So he had 2 jobs then?
He had 2 jobs. He would go early morning and work until 12 at the fraternity, and then he would, I think it was 3 o'clock, but he had to go on. He worked the night shift, 3 to 11.
How did the fraternity treat your parents?
I don't have any negative feelings. Now, my dad worked at 2 fraternities during his lifespan that I know of. First, it was the Kappa Sigma. And I can remember whenever we would go up there, he would take us there. I can remember one incident where we were visiting and the boys were talking to us and I was saying, "Yes, sir," and as I had been taught. And at that point, they kept saying, "You don't have to say that. You could just say yes and no." But I didn't feel very comfortable because I had been taught to say "yes, sir," "yes, ma'am" to all adults. And at that point, I didn't realize that they were just teenagers. But they were, it was, it seemed to be a good relationship. Now, the second fraternity that he worked at, it was Chi Psi Lodge. They more or less looked on him as a father figure. He helped. In fact, he became an honorary member of that fraternity. And I think they looked at him a little bit differently from that first group. In fact, when he passed, the whole fraternity came, and they were honorary pallbearers, but they came to the church and sat in the church, and afterwards they invited not just our family, but all who attended the funeral. They invited them to come up for an after-service dinner. And I think that was because of maybe the feelings, their feeling of loss. They wanted to do, this was quite different.
How long had your father worked at the Chi Psi house?
A number of years now. I'm vague on that, Bob. I don't remember the exact number of years. But he worked at the Kappa Sig. My grandfather had worked at the Kappa Sig house. So this had been passed along. And Daddy was cleaning. Was something that he took great pride in. I can remember going to the Kappa Sig house, and the floors were shining. Well, he, the buffer, and I can remember Mother saying one morning after he'd worked several days getting things spotless, for some occasion he walked in, and it had been tracked up, mud all over the floor, and after. And he didn't like that, you know. He had to get out and get it done right away. And he was very much like that at home, where he'd like to have things in place and cleaned up. Those guys there were a little bit more reckless, I think, than the Chi Psi people. They had not as much regard for his feelings about wanting to keep things straight. But anyway, I think I've lost my point.
That's all right. The the years that your mother and father worked for the fraternities, did the fraternities provide them with extra food or clothing or gifts?
Not that I remember. I guess at Christmas times, maybe they did. I can remember, though, growing up, my mother was, in terms of preparing and getting things prepared in advance for us, I can remember. I think she made friends, like with the produce people that would bring food in, and ahead of Christmas time, she would buy crates of apples, and upstairs there was a closet where she used to hide our Christmas until Christmas. But in advance of Christmas, you could smell apples, you could smell oranges, and it was just a good smell around there, because she would buy, and I guess she would be given special rates or whatever permission, but she would have not just apples, she would have red apples, yellow apples, and oranges, and all sorts of stuff there. And I guess maybe they allowed her to do this, but she, in her planning, she would, and in terms of us in the mornings going to school, frequently Daddy would come home, and my grandmother, my aunt, who cooked for the family, would get up, and each morning we would have cereal, cream of wheat, grits, or oatmeal. We had all of those basic kinds of things, but sometimes Daddy would come from the fraternity and maybe bring us a special treat if they had pancakes or French toast or something, that he would come and make sure that we were taken care of in terms of our breakfast time. On game days, big games, now you could hear the crowds roar from the stadium. We could hear on McDade Street when Carolina had made a touchdown or when they were doing well. But Mother would have to make lots and lots of sandwiches and stuff for the crowds to come in. And on game days, I can remember, we had more friends in the neighborhood than at any other time, because my brothers would invite all their buddies to come and share this. We would have the leftover sandwiches, and Daddy would bring a box, and my brothers would always have plenty of friends there at the house on those particular days.
Help with the feast, huh?
Help with the feast, donuts and whatever. But I don't remember any particular financial help that they were given other than their salaries.
Did they work 5 days, 6 days, 7 days a week?
They worked 7 days.
7 days a week.
Mm-hmm.
What was your feeling about that?
It was something that I was born into, and I don't think I questioned it a great deal. And the fact that they saw the need to give us special time, and on the weekends, I think the Sundays there were only two meals instead of the three meals, so that they're. And then I think sometimes Mother was the main cook, but she had helpers, and I think they arranged among themselves to have maybe sometimes away, so that weekend times, and especially on Sunday, that was a family time that we all spent together. And in the evenings, I was thinking about this not long ago, when they would come in after we had had our baths and everything, I remember that they would sit down and read to us, or I think they felt sort of guilty, maybe, about not having as much time as they thought we needed. So they would at night in the evening, they would make a point of sitting down. I remember Uncle Remus being read to us a lot. We had a series of books and things that Mother would always buy to sort of fill in the gaps. And my grandmother, quiet, but it was just sort of the way things were. And at that point in my life, I didn't do a lot of questioning, you know, what my parents had spelled out for me. This is the way things are.
Just accept it.
Later in life, I did question things, but back then, and I didn't have a real need to at that time because my needs were being met at that point.
If not by your parents, then by your aunt and
grandmother? My grandmother. And I had an aunt who was there all the time. She had been sort of sickly, so she stayed at home.
She's the one who did the cooking?
No. This was another one.
Another aunt?
This was another aunt. The one that did the cooking later got a job, and she too worked in sororities and fraternities. First she worked in the health department, but later she went on to work in a fraternity.
Did you feel you were poor at the time?
No.
Looking back on it, did you think you were poor?
No, because there were so many people who were less fortunate. And I sort of saw us as being maybe middle of the road.
Mm-hmm.
We were well provided for.
So you didn't go hungry or with not enough clothes?
No.
The basics in life were there, and there was love from, if not enough time with your parents, from other relatives in the household.
Right, right. My grandmother was a seamstress, and mother enjoyed her children. She enjoyed dressing us nicely, and as I told you about the fruits, she also planned in advance for clothing. When it was time for school, midsummer, she would take us, we would ride the bus over to Durham or wherever, and she would start laying away clothes for us, preparing for the fall. And at that point, holidays were big, so you would get an outfit for Christmas, Children's Day, Easter, or whatever. I can remember once when she had bought this special dress for me for Easter, and it was a thin, frilly kind of thing, and on Easter, it snowed. So, at that point, we were cold, but we had coats, of course, but it was because she had planned in advance that we were not prepared for the weather.
You had mentioned that there were so many who were less fortunate than you. Can you describe the general tenor of the neighborhood where you lived, your friends, those? You say a lot who were less fortunate. Maybe you could just broaden that statement, how you saw the community.
Well, the MacDade Street, or they used to call it Pottageville, I think that's what they used to call it. Most of the families in that area were intact. There was a mother, a father, and other family members. And when I attended school, I think was when I first ran into families that were not as complete as mine. And then I became more aware of, I think perhaps we were rather protected, and, you know, even after we grew older. But I didn't know about, there was an area called Tin Top, and I used to hear my parents and people in the house talking about these areas, but I didn't have first-hand experience with that until I attended school. And I can remember in one class, there was this girl. She was really much, much larger than I was. And she was poorly dressed and poorly groomed. And she sat behind me. Her hair was quite short. And most of our classmates were afraid of her. I too was afraid. But she sat behind me and she liked to take my hair loose and plait it because I had longer hair. And every day when I would get home or when mother was getting ready to comb my hair, she would be upset with me because this girl had taken my hair loose and replaited it or played with it. And it was hard for mother to, she had plaited it so finely that it was hard for mother. It would take extra time. But I was not about to tell this girl to leave my hair alone because I wanted to be a friend, and I was also afraid of her. But she was from the other side.
You mentioned Tin Top. Can you tell me more about what your parents said about Tin Top?
Well, that was an area where, from my impression, that was an area where there was people who lived a little bit freer than we did. I guess their standards were quite different. You know, there was a lot of drinking, a lot of looseness that we didn't see in my house. And I would often hear about fighting and people who lived, it sounded like the wild side to a child. My parents, and when I say my parents, I'm speaking of all of the adults in my family, they were careful not to allow us to hear too much of that.
So they tried to protect you.
Mm-hmm.
Was there, in the Tin Top area, absentee fatherism, single family homes?
Absentee fathers, yes. And a lot of, when I grew up and I went down in that area, I was a little bit surprised. I was even surprised. It didn't seem like I thought it was going to be.
Wasn't as bad, or
wasn't
as good?
Bad. Mm-hmm. It wasn't as bad as I had thought it was going to be, and the people weren't as bad as I thought they would be.
Did you see other areas where you saw where there was the same sort of looseness in the Pottersfield area?
I think there were pockets in the Pottersfield area that I wasn't aware of. I can remember people down the street. You know, sometimes we would see someone who had been drinking, you know, making their way home. And that particular street was sort of, we didn't see much of it, but there were down the street away from the upper end where we were.
Excuse me.
It seemed like always that other side was down the street rather than up the hill. And we were going up the hill. We weren't up the hill all the way. We were sort of in the middle.
Would you say that, correct me if I'm wrong, please, would you say that Caldwell Street and Church Street were streets that had families that were more stable, and McDade Street?
Mm-hmm.
Is that, do you believe, true?
I believe true. Caldwell Street, might have been maybe a step above in terms. Well, Carwell Street, when I grew up, the children had come in and built homes where the older people had owned the land, and that was, and they were newer homes at that point.
Mm-hmm.
The homes on Church and MacDade were still older homes, so the homes on Carwell Street were sort of the newest.
Can you describe what your house was like when you were growing up, Shirley?
The house we lived in, it was a large two-story house. Upstairs there were three bedrooms, four bedrooms. Downstairs my grandmother lived, and I slept with my grandmother. My mother and father slept upstairs with my brother. They had two bedrooms upstairs. I slept downstairs with my grandmother, and the living room and dining room and kitchen were down, all downstairs, but my grandmother had the downstairs area. And my aunt, the one that I told you about doing the cooking, she actually did the cooking for my grandmother and for her family. Mother did the cooking for us. We in fact had a refrigerator where there was one side that belonged to us and one side that belonged to my grandmother and my aunt. And I've told this story a lot. It seemed like when I was younger, I was always fascinated by that other side, what they had on that side. And, and I can remember that the ice trays were on that side. And my grandmother had a sister who lived maybe several blocks away from us. And every day at lunchtime, she would stop by to talk with my grandmother. And they would have coffee and a lunch of some kind. It was always small, but while they were talking one day, I tipped out on the back porch where the refrigerator was, and this was my time to examine the refrigerator. And as I said, the ice trays were on that side, and I decided that I wanted to lick some of the ice, and my tongue got stuck. So in order to try to free myself, I pushed my lip against the ice. And there I was on my toe, and I couldn't call my grandmother. And I didn't want to call her because I didn't want her to find me on that side. But that was just, and I was not too many feet away from her bedroom. But they were having their coffee, and their lunch, and this was my chance, and they finally came out and found me and helped me get loose. But
a little embarrassing for you.
A little embarrassing. But going back a little bit, I'll tell you about my family. My aunt was my grandmother's younger sister, and there was always a closeness on both sides of the family that we grew up with. My grandmother would call her sister, they called each other sis. And they, you know, every chance they had, they would spend time together. And this is something that we still do on Sundays, even though I don't attend Brad's church. Sometimes I do. He's Baptist, and I grew up Methodist, and actually mother is Baptist, but my dad was Methodist, and my grandmother that we lived with was Methodist, so we grew up in the Methodist church, and I tried for a while attending Brad's church, but I didn't like it, so I returned to my church, so I come to Chapel Hill.
Is that St. Paul?
I come to Chapel Hill. We talked about it, and we decided that that kind of thing would not separate us. And my mother and father, I had a minister to ask. In fact, it was my husband's, it was Brad's minister, said, how did this ever happen? And I told him it was something I grew up with. My dad was Methodist and mother was Baptist, so it wasn't something that I saw as dividing people. My other grandmother was Baptist, and this was something else that I grew up with. My father's people were dark complexion people. Mother's people were light, bright, and almost white, most. But something I learned early on was that didn't make a difference. There was always love and closeness, and I'm glad that I was able to learn that as a child, that never made a difference. We loved them both, even though they were different.
Your mother looks like she has a fair amount of Indian blood in her. Is that true?
I don't think so.
Not that it makes any difference.
No, I don't. My grandmother probably might have, her mother might have had some, but I don't believe that was the case.
Well, I would love to stay with more about growing up, but I know that you have limited time and you're tough to get a hold of, so, and I know you have a lot to offer regarding your experiences at Lincoln High, so let's move on. You went to Orange County Training School?
Orange County became Northside.
In 48-49.
Right, and I didn't attend school until 46. So just a couple of years.
And then it was called Lincoln.
Lincoln once, so it was Northside until Lincoln was a different building altogether. So I graduated sixth grade, Northside, and then I attended Lincoln.
Oh, I see. Right there at the same site?
No.
Oh, so you left in 51 to go to Lincoln on Merritt Mill Road.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, I'm interested in your thoughts about Lincoln High School.
Well, while I was at Northside, I got involved with the band. Mr. Bell, in fact. Right. His wife was my fifth grade teacher. That was before they married. She was a Mrs. Scales at that point when she first came to Chapel Hill. But she was my fifth grade teacher, and somewhere along the way, they began a relationship. So I was in her class, and when I started to play in the band, I would, at lunchtime, I would practice with him, but they would be having lunch together. So I don't know, it added sort of a special feeling. I picked up on whatever they were feeling.
So you started playing in the band in fifth grade. Is that when you started taking lessons?
That's when I started taking lessons.
And what
right.
instrument did you play?
I started on the saxophone.
Uh-huh.
actually, I can't remember at what point, but it was under Mr. Bell that I started, that I became, I started to march in the marching band. At first I was just I was one of the younger majorettes in the band, and then I started music, and eventually I started to play. I played first sax by the time I got in the larger band, the concert band, and I transferred to oboe. I played in the symphonic band, but I always had such a good feeling for
Mr. Bell
and Mrs. Bell, because it seemed like I grew with them.
And their love for one another.
Their love for one another. Because she would actually sit in on my lessons. They were having lunch together and I was practicing. I was learning the instrument.
So he taught you at school during lunch hour?
Yes, during his lunchtime.
During his lunchtime. Did he do that with others as well?
I suspect he did. Mm-hmm. I don't remember specifically any other students that he might have done that with, but I remember sharing their lunchtime with them, because often he would be eating a sandwich, and I was very bothered by the fact that playing a reed instrument, I didn't really want him to show me how to play, because he was eating and I'm learning, and he would get so carried away sometimes with his zest for wanting me to learn a certain thing that he would grab the instrument and sandwich and all, and I couldn't say that to him. But I grew with them, and I just had a great feeling for the two of them and the music.
So you continued that when you went into seventh grade at Lincoln High on Merritt Mill Road?
Yes.
What was your impression of the teachers at the school?
Well, I don't have very many negative feelings about teachers, and I think because of the fact that I was a good student. If you were doing well, they didn't bother you necessarily, mm-hmm. and you didn't have that much to worry about. And at that point, I was one of the better students, so I enjoyed a better time at school than a lot of other children did.
Can you tell me about the other children who didn't have as good a time in school? I guess what I'm asking you is, did teachers favor certain students over others, and what was the characteristic of that student if they did favor it? Tough question.
Yeah, having taught myself, I can understand to a certain degree those that make your life easier, you're going to look on them a little bit more favorably. But there were other students that who came from those areas that I talked about earlier that didn't enjoy the same kind of things that I might have enjoyed. They weren't as involved. Their parents weren't as involved with them. And I think that helped too, that my parents were involved. My father was very protective, overly protective of me at that point. I wasn't allowed to do a lot after school other than the extracurricular kinds of things that I was involved in. I can remember often thinking about those other kids. I wouldn't be allowed to play with them or interact that much with them after school, but I had sympathies for them.
So you think that the poorer students, the ones who came from the Tin Top area, other areas that were the problem areas,
disadvantaged areas,
they were more likely to be less favored by the teachers?
Right.
Were they the ones who dropped out?
A lot of them did. A lot of them learned, though, early on to involve themselves.
Tell me about that.
Well, there were students who, instead of just crying in their cup, they got up and work to move themselves away from that tin top cloud. And there were quite a few of those in the school at that point. There were some who just sat and didn't do very much about their situations, but there were some students, quite a few, who worked to move themselves away from that.
So it wasn't a given that if you were from that area that you necessarily would be a poor student and uninvolved and drop out.
Right.
I want to ask you a series of closed-end questions here, a little different from what I've done. Can you recall approximately how many were in your graduating class?
Close to 100.
100 students graduated with you. That is amazing. That was what year?
Maybe I have expanded the number now. I have a picture of my graduating class. 58. Maybe that's too many.
I guess what I'm driving at is a rough percentage of how many dropped out along the way from seventh grade to graduation.
Frequently, there were those that were left behind.
So you had some who were left behind.
Mm-hmm.
Was there some who left because of being pregnant?
There were some. I can remember two or three. I don't remember.
Not many.
Uh-huh. And in fact, there was a girl who ended up being our second. She was the salutatorian. She became pregnant, but she graduated with us. I don't remember exactly how that worked out, but she just died recently. And we're planning this class, my class, we're meeting, and we're planning to give a scholarship, small, but we're starting it. And we're naming it in her honor. In fact, the fellow who was the valedictorian and the girl, they're both dead. So we're naming it in honor of those two people. We want to give a small scholarship to someone at Chadwell High, an Afro-American student. So, but I can only remember at this point two or three girls that stopped.
Were there people who dropped out because they had to go to work?
There were some. I can remember some.
Do you have any idea, a rough idea? I know it's a long time ago and you probably didn't take a survey at the time, but do you have any idea of how many went on for further education?
There are a group of us now meeting, and most of this group that we're meeting now, most of them attended college at some level, or there were some who became nurses, practical nurses, and I guess this was wouldn't necessitate a college degree. But most of them, there are about 50 at least out of that group.
So you'd say half of the
half,
students
at least half,
went
not
on for
a few more.
More.
Mm-hmm. Right. At least half of them.
What was it like being in the band?
I enjoyed it, and as I said earlier, if you were good at something, you enjoyed it better because you had more successes than some others, and I was not bad. I was first saxophonist, and then I moved to oboe, and I loved it. I enjoyed it.
But you were also a drum majorette. How did you do both of those?
In the marching band, I was a majorette, but once the marching season was over and it was concert time or the symphony, I played in that. So marching band was active mostly during the football season, Christmas, those kinds of things. But symphonic band.